It's the only golf radio show in the capital of golf. The Classic in the Palm Beach is live here on ESPN 106.3. Every Saturday morning, the stories, the players, the leaderboard, we cover it all. To tee off your weekend, it's the Classic in the Palm Beaches live.
Peter Malnati, the newest feel-good story in golf and the most dominant player on the planet trying to do it again. Welcome into the only golf radio show in Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches live right here on ESPN 106.3. Good Saturday morning to you. I'm Ken Lavica. For the next hour, it is golf, including a chat with the great Bob Herrig, Sports Illustrated, ESPN. He has a new book about Tiger Woods on the way, and he'll tell us all about it. And if you're a Tiger Woods fan, this is going to be a must purchase, a must read. Bob Herrig has done it again with his latest book, a book detailing the resilience and the greatness of Tiger Woods. Before we dive into Peter Malnati and his miraculous comeback win that turned into, really, in a time in golf where it's hard to feel good about much, something that absolutely warms your heart. Let me tell you about Tito's, proud partner of the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, official vodka sponsor of the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches and the PGA Tour. In their eighth year as a partner of the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, Tito's was proud to be a part of the event that so positively impacts the Palm Beaches community. The official vodka of the PGA Tour, Tito's sponsors over 35 tournaments annually across the PGA Tour family of events, the Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour Champions, and the PGA Tour all over the U.S., and they're proud to help those tournaments support their local communities and the nonprofits those events contribute to. Tito's handmade vodka, 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof, crafted to be savored responsibly. Peter Malnati, what a win. 9 shots down, and he comes all the way back to edge Cameron Young at the Valspar Championship. Malnati, a closing round, 4-under, finishes 12-under for the tournament, and that 2-shot win over Cam Young. Malnati at 12-under par, Young at 10-under, Mackenzie Hughes, Chandler Phillips at 9-under par, and that's how the Valspar Championship leaderboard shook out. It is the first championship for Malnati, the first win on tour in 9 years, and understandably so, after he closed things out on 18, Peter Malnati with NBC, extremely, extremely emotional about his long-awaited triumph.
9 years after you first won on the PGA Tour, Peter Malnati, you're now a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. What did you draw on coming down the stretch to become a winner out of this bunch leaderboard?
I have no idea. I told myself I was going to do my best on every shot, and that was what I did, and I was so nervous coming down the stretch. A lot of those shots, you kind of see it in the, you know, the approach into 16 was terrible, but I was just, you can't describe it. It's so cool. It's so cool to share it with, it's just amazing. It's just amazing.
I mentioned that it's been 9 years. Can you describe what that wait has been like to get this second win and get to celebrate with Hatcher, Dash, and Alicia?
I mean, you wonder if you're ever going to do it again, you know, because it's hard. And, you know, in the 9 years since my last win, it's gotten a lot harder, too. Like, if you look, like, the level of talent out here, guys coming out when they're, you know, 20 years old and they're ready to play on this stage and they're so good, it's just, I mean, you just wonder, like, and so to have this moment, it just feels so amazing. I mean, obviously, you know, my family believes in me. I've got the best caddy. He's been loyal to me for a long time through a lot of, like, down times, too. I'm just so thankful. I'm just so thankful for my wife. She makes this all possible because life is hard. Like, it's obviously glamorous at times like this, and this is my dream job, and it's absolutely amazing, but life is really, really hard too when you're trying to figure out how to live this lifestyle and have 2 kids and be everything that you want to be. It's really hard, and my wife has been an absolute rock through all of it. She's amazing, and You know, I got my mom here. My family's amazing. My two little boys. Like, it's just... It just feels so good. It feels so good.
Well, congratulations, Peter. Soak up this win. You're now a two-time winner on the PGA Tour.
Thank you so much.
So that obviously tugs at the heartstrings, but it didn't stop there because the golf world was abuzz about Peter Malnati and just how relatable that was. And the life is hard, and he's right. And he was asked then in advance of this week in Houston, he was asked by media why he thought that win resonated so much with not only the golf community, but the fringe fans and even outside of golf. And here was a very thoughtful response from him and certainly a great look at the current, sometimes bleak landscape of professional golf.
I think at the end of the day, do you remember, like, we can all probably remember when we were kids, and we were all kids at different times, but the things that moved us, that we watched, that, like, I remember watching Jordan in the 97 Bulls. I remember watching Tiger in the 2000 Masters. I didn't care one iota what Jordan's contract was. I didn't care one iota what the winner's check at that U.S. Open was. And I think people are sick of that. You know, I think people are just sick of the narrative in golf being about, you know, contracts on live, purses on the tour, guaranteed comp on the tour. I think people are so sick of that. They want to see sport. They want to see people who are the best in the world at what they do it at a high level and celebrate that. Celebrate the athleticism, celebrate the achievement. And you know, obviously this is a business, and you know, to the top players who drive a lot of the value in this business, we've got to compensate them fairly. We've got to make that happen. But I think we're doing that and above and beyond. And the narrative, the storylines, the conversation needs to come back to the product on the course and what we do. And I think, you know, for me, that was like, I just feel like no kid dreamed when they're watching Jordan, dreamed of having his salary. They didn't care about that. They dreamed of being in that moment and hitting that shot. And I think that's what our fans care about too, and that's what they want to see. So I hope, you know, those tears that I was crying on that 18th green had nothing to do with, you know, my share of that, what was it, an $8.4 million purse last week. My tears had nothing to do with my share of that. I'm going to enjoy it. We're going to use it to do a lot of good in this world. But that had nothing to do with that. And I don't think our fans care about that either. So I hope that connected with some people. And I hope that can be. I do think everyone out here who plays and competes would agree with me on that. I just hope that can be, you know, the story that we tell can come back to the best athletes in the world competing on the biggest stage in the world and doing it, you know, to show off this amazing skill that we have that can be so entertaining for people. I want that to be our story.
I think those are as wise a words as have been said in the pro golf realm in quite some time. Peter Malnati, the rightful winner last week at the Valspar, and this week the PGA Tour focuses on Houston before the Masters comes into the limelight. Gosling's, the official rum and ginger beer of the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Discover delicious in every sip with the dark and stormy ready-to-drink canned cocktails. Come in mango, pineapple, and black cherry flavors, and the new ocean-aged rum, Spirited Seas. For more information about Gosling's products and delicious recipes, visit goslingsrum.com. 21 and over. Please drink responsibly. That's Gosling's. Earlier this week here on ESPN 106.3, Levicka, Theo, and Stone, our good friend Theo Dorsey, he is the Theo part of Levicka, Theo, and Stone, he has for the last couple of months been trying to for all intents and purposes, learn the game of golf. He obviously knows the game of golf, but he's trying to learn how to play the game of golf. And it's been quite a process. And he's basically learning from scratch. And he's been doing so at the Kaiser Golf Coaching Center. They do great work in West Palm Beach. And him and his coach, Pete, have really dug in. And again, this is a blank canvas for Theo Dorsey. So he is learning how to quite literally drive and chip and putt and do all of those things, the mental component of the game, all from scratch. And his goal by the end of the year is to collect a birdie, in a round of golf. That's his goal for the year. I think it's awesome. I've only had one birdie in my entire life. I'm a not very accomplished golfer. I spent a lot of time working in the golf realm of country clubs through high school and college. Got to golf for free. Kind of taught myself how to play. And even then, only one birdie I've been able to register in that entire time. So Theo, he has set a lofty goal for himself, and I love it. I think it's phenomenal. He went out to the Palm Beach Par 3 earlier this week with NFL great Pierre Garçon, and unfortunately for Theo, was not able to register the birdie that he was seeking. Now, and this is a different discussion for a different time, I would argue that it doesn't count if you get a birdie on a par 3. If you go through the first four holes of a par 3 and get into a realm in a number of par 3s you would not see on a regulation course, then it doesn't count. Or at the very least, I'm putting an asterisk there. But again, that's a different discussion for a different time. Great controversy took place on Thursday when Theo, discussing his failure to birdie on the Palm Beach par 3 course with Pierre Garçon, He brought up a physical issue with himself that Stone and myself have never heard him talk about. He's never brought it up. He's never offered it. And while we're very sympathetic to his physical plight, Stone Labanowitz said it sounded a little bit like an excuse, a way to explain away a disappointing round of golf. And Stone wasn't overly impressed. I have a heart. I have great empathy, but I also, to an extent, question why Theo waited until a bad round of golf to offer up his physical reason for struggling with the game of golf. It's just a little bit suspicious. See what you think. This is from Lavica, Theo, and Stone, Thursday on ESPN 106.3. Excuse or not, Theo Dorsey's revelation of a physical ailment offered up right after a bad round of golf.
One thing that you guys don't know about me that I hide very well because I try and recorrect it with posture, I have severe scoliosis. I have severe scoliosis, and it affects my ability.
Wait, is that real?
No, for real. Exactly. See, you didn't know that.
You have scoliosis?
Yes, it affects my golf swing. It affects my ability to have a consistent golf swing because I have bad posture naturally. I have a dip. And it's a lot of recorrecting I have to do on a swing-to-swing basis, but in general, in life. But I need to be more forthcoming and tell my coach Pete about my scoliosis so he can help adjust some things in my game, because he's told me a few times, like, hey, your shoulder's dipping down a little too low there as you approach the ball. You know, move. So he corrects these things when I'm with him, but then when I'm out there on the golf course, I'm kicking it with buddies. I'll go back to, you know, my more natural posture, which is a bit tilted, a bit leaned, and it affects the consistency in which I strike the ball. So things like that I can tune up by continuing to go to the Kaiser University Golf Coaching Center, and I will birdie this year. I will birdie this year, and I believe in myself because I've gotten better, and the fact that I was even – I got two pars, which I know is not impressive to you guys.
No, that's fine.
I got two pars.
It would be more impressive if it didn't happen on a par 3 course, but it's still fine.
No, that's great.
I got two pars in a day where I was hitting the ball so erratically. But on those, you know, it was good. I was able to chain together three good shots, and I wouldn't even be able to do that if it wasn't for the Kaiser University Golf Coaching Center. I know we joke a lot. My golf game was horrendous. Still is bad, but it's getting better and better with each time I train with Coach Pete and each time I go out there to a golf course. So a birdie's happening this year, people. And if you want birdies yourself, KaiserGolfCenter.com. KaiserGolfCenter.com. It's right in the heart of Palm Beach County off I-95 and the Turnpike. KaiserGolfCenter.com at the flagship campus of Kaiser University. And it's true. I have scoliosis, but...
I didn't know that. Are you sure you're just not, like,
no,
imbalanced? Like, you have a literal bend in your spine?
Every time I go to a new doctor and I have to have x-rays for whatever reason, they're like, yo, I don't know if anybody's ever told you this.
Yo, bro, your spine is bent.
I've been told, like, because I'm right at 6 foot flat. And I was told by a doctor if it wasn't for the curvature of my spine, I'd be almost 6'2".
You could have played in the league.
I could have been a point guard.
Man. I did not know that.
I did not know that you had scoliosis.
Is it your choice? I think we all have scoliosis.
What is he laughing at? I don't think it's a laughing matter. This is a serious condition.
My spine is like, it's seriously jacked up. I wish I could show you guys how bad it is.
But I have a problem with Theo blaming scoliosis.
for not being good at golf.
I'm not blaming scoliosis.
That's why it was like, impacts your golf swing.
In fairness, that was the first thing you brought up.
No, it's something completely unprovoked. No.
I have arthritis in my fingers, which affects my putting.
All right. And that might be true. It's not excuses, it's reasons. It's a legit thing.
I have bad hand-eye coordination, which is why I can't hit my irons.
You know what's funny?
I Googled last week, too, about scoliosis and how it affects your golf swing. You know what website popped up? collegeofgolf.kaiseruniversity.edu. They have a whole article on how scoliosis affects.
I had spinal surgery. So bending down off the tee box, instead of hitting it my normal 325 that I do, it's 260.
Ooh, nice flex.
But I donated
this guy. By the way, I think what Stone's issue is here, Theo, is that you've been taking lessons for months and you haven't brought up the scoliosis until now when you actually went out.
I know I have scoliosis. I didn't know
that it could affect your game like it does.
I didn't think about it in that way. But for real though, because as a person that kind of tries to mask it, again, when I first got on TV, my first TV job, they literally brought a consultant in. It was myself, my news director, and a consultant because they thought they had to address me about bad posture. And they felt terrible when I told them. I was like, I'm sorry, guys. You're right. I do dip a little bit. It's not because I'm trying to be cool or I'm relaxed. I have scoliosis.
She just said, now I'm suing you.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done.
I could have made some bank.
Now this is happening.
Raycon Media. Yeah. I could have came after you guys. But no, for real. It's a real thing. Like, I have a severe, like I might have real serious back problems later on in life. I need to probably get some things tuned up, but it does affect my ability to. It's why not only it's because I'm left-handed, but everything I do looks so unorthodox because my back is like a freaking pretzel. It is.
I don't mean to laugh at that. That was a funny way to put it.
I don't.
Can you save that, by the way?
Of course.
My back is like,
because when we do get him, as he put it, tuned up, we can have the doctor hear that. Like, my back is like a freaking pretzel.
I'm gonna title this segment that you asked me to save as excuses for my golf game.
It's not excuses. I suck because I suck.
See, this is where Stone's trying to lessen the severity of your issue. I'm just trying to get a further explanation of it, and
it's like a question mark almost.
My spine has
a huge curve. It's like it goes up and then it goes like this and it curves back. It's not good. That's why my chest is uneven. My left pec is always sticking out more. So
your spine's like a treble clef. Like it's like
kind of, yeah. It has a curve. I'll get some x-rays soon and get pictures and show you guys.
No, you don't need to do that. Yeah. I believe you. But that would be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. For ESPN West Palm Bay.
That's actually kind of legit.
Keep giggling and Ken, you hit the nail on the head and when you said, I think Stone's laughing because it's March 28th, 2024, and this is the first time you decided to bring it up. And yes, you basically led with it.
I did, kind of.
Like, you know, it's hard for me to golf. I have scoliosis.
It was jarring because it's like, wait, where has this been for 4 months?
Here's the thing. When I hadn't been going out and golfing 18 holes.
Right, so this was you, like, letting it loose for the first time.
So, this is why I really was saying it. I was trying to make a point. I did a terrible job of doing so. When I'm with Pete, when my posture goes wrong, he fixes it. He's like, "Oh, you're leaning too much this way."
He holds your hands. He's able to guide you.
Figuratively, he holds my hips. Thank you.
Grasping your hips and helping you follow through.
I need help. I need help. And thanks to people like the Kaiser University Golf Coaching Center that work with golfers of all levels.
Right.
I'm at the bottom prong. And
I'm really upset with Stone that this man had spinal surgery and he's not taking your scoliosis seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that that's actually very off-putting, Stone. Because
there's not a time in my life where I'm going to blame anything on my back. I would never do that. Maybe that's why I'm laughing.
I'm not blaming it.
But he's giving some context.
I literally just gave reasons. There's a difference between excuses and reasons.
Right.
I refuse to give either. It's a reason. It's a thing. And that's why I was like, if I'm golfing with Pete, he probably would have like, hey, that's why you're doing this is because you're doing this wrong. When I'm with Pierre and Cade, it's like, yo, that shot sucked. Like, what are you going to do to recover your balls in the street?
Did Pierre birdie anything?
He didn't have any birdies
either. See, that's the thing.
What? Pierre's good, though. He's good, but I mean, you, all right, I want to golf with you guys. You suckers.
Well, Stone would get a birdie. I would not, but I also, I would just go have a good time with the boys.
No, he wouldn't. How about this? We're going to all three go golfing together. We're setting this up. You're not going to birdie. We're going to a par three. Let's do it.
It can, no matter what course it is.
You're going to birdie no matter what course it is.
Oh, I'll definitely knock down one under par.
Yeah.
On a regular 18-hole course.
Stone, any hole.
Stone
right,
can rocket it, man. Like, he puts himself in a position to succeed.
I'm not saying that the guy can't do it. I'm saying you won't do it.
I'd birdie more if I didn't have spinal surgery.
Jesus, man.
I'm sorry.
This is why you can't be vulnerable.
I know.
This is why you can't be real
on
radio.
He doesn't take anything seriously.
Now, I'm going to be walking down the street. I'll be shopping at freaking Publix, and somebody's going to be like, hey, how's the back?
Yeah.
Leaning a little left today?
What's up, old question mark?
Yeah.
Can't
play golf?
All right. Right.
Now it's only because men can't be vulnerable.
Insensitive Stone. Insensitive Stone over here. Theo's trying to open up to something that is afflicting him, and Stone's just making it all giggle fest. So you be the judge. Is Theo just making an excuse by suddenly proclaiming scoliosis because he did not play well when he went to the Palm Beach par 3? Or is Stone being very, very, very judgmental and insensitive to Theo? Edwin Watts Golf Shops. At Edwin Watts Golf Shops by Worldwide Golf, there's something that binds us all, the collective goal to transcend the ordinary, introducing the new Callaway AI Smoke Driver with Smart Face technology. The new AI design club has multiple sweet spots across the face, making it an average of 7 yards longer than the prior model. Visit them in store for a free custom fitting at your local Edwin Watts Golf Shops, or shop them online at worldwidegolf.com. Edwin Watts Golf Shops. Get there. The great Bob Herrick has another book coming out. It is about Tiger Woods, and it's titled Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. A great look at Tiger Woods and his legendary perseverance. Bob Herrick joins us when we come back. This is Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches live on ESPN 106.3. Back on Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches live, Edwin Watts Golf Shops. You may have seen the new location, LA Fitness Center, right by PGA National. And at Edwin Watts Golf Shops, there's something that binds us all, the collective goal to transcend the ordinary. Introducing the all-new TaylorMade QI10 Max driver, combining TaylorMade distance with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. Experience your drives in 10K. Visit them in store for a free custom fitting at your local Edwin Watts Golf Shops, or shop them online at worldwidegolf.com. Edwin Watts Golf Shops. Get there. It is a pleasure talking with this man because, one, I'll always talk Tiger Woods anytime I can, and especially with a man who knows Tiger Woods about as well as anybody. His latest book is Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods. You've read his work, ESPN, Tampa Bay Times, Sports Illustrated, and he has his newest book again, as I mentioned, Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods. It is Bob Herrick with us here on ESPN 106.3, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches live. Bob, thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it, and I just want to start with this before we really dive in, because this book, its focus is really Tiger and how he came back from the back surgeries, all the injuries, to win at Augusta in 2019. But why, as we sit here 5 years later, earlier this week on my midday radio show, I was literally saying, man, if I could get one more Tiger major in the bag, I would be as happy as can be. Why are we still so infatuated and caught up in Tiger Woods?
It's a great question. I think part of it just has to do with the fact that he came along and was unlike anybody else before him. You know, there was just so many things about Tiger that captured, I think, people's imagination. You know, first of all, being in my minority, you know, coming along that way, that was part of it. Let's be honest. I mean, Tiger, you know, looks different than the typical golfer. You know, we do not have an influx of black golfers, minority golfers in the sport.
Right.
There was a hope that he would bring that along, and while he's helped, still a long way to go. I also think the fact that, you know, people have memories of Tiger being on TV when he was like 5 and 6 years old. And who like, what kind of phenom that gets attention at such an early age ever goes on to do anything with it? Like, it just doesn't happen. They fizzle out or there's too much hype. You know, Tiger surpassed it. Tiger had tons of hype as a you know, a college player, amateur player, coming into the pro ranks. You know, people started talking about him and Nicklaus early on. Really, if you think about it, that's ridiculous. And yet, look at what he's done. You know, I know he didn't get the Jack's major record, but he did just about everything else. And I think that there's still a fascination with him because if you watch Tiger Woods hit a golf ball today, you go, why can't he win? Because he still hits it great. You know, but of course, there's the other issues that he has to deal with. Getting to the ball, being able to spend the time practicing to nurture his game is a problem right now.
I think that the way you put that, Bob, I think that's what's still jarring to the senses of even a casual golf fan, is that there was a time, not terribly too long ago, where he seemed superhuman. He looked different from everybody else. He was muscle-bound. He seemed indestructible. He was the biggest hitter. He had the best laser focus. And now what we know him to be since really 2014, maybe even earlier than that on, is someone who's hobbling around, someone who's clutching at his back, somebody who's limping all over the course, now somebody who can't finish 4 days of a golf tournament. I think to me, that's the most jarring thing, but you see these glimpses of, boy, he still got some of that talent in there, and I think it's so tantalizing for some people. When it comes to just how banged up he is, in you and how you've covered him, how much of that is self-inflicted? Not the car accident, but before that, and how he trained and how he prepared himself.
It's fair to ask that. It's fair to wonder if the weight training, if the, you know, the never-ending quest to get bigger and stronger ended up hurting his back. So, like, it's probably hard for him to pinpoint. Look, given some of the Navy that he did, you know, there was a, you know, he did stuff like that too, and maybe he jarred his back and it didn't bother him at the beginning, but over time there was wear and tear. Certainly, you know, the number of golf swings that you make as a pro golfer didn't help, even if he didn't do anything to himself. But there's certainly an argument to be made that a lot of his injuries are self-inflicted because the amount of training that he did and the amount of heavy lifting that he did is unusual for a golfer. And you can make the argument it's probably not necessary. You know, Tiger was plenty strong. Tiger got the ball out there plenty far. And the type of training I think that's important is endurance. You know, being able to walk, being strong, being fit, being flexible. But I don't know that upper body strength was so important. Now, I think he finds that it is now because he can't use his lower body like he'd like to, especially his right leg. You know, having the upper body strength helps him get the ball out there. You notice if he swings now, there's nowhere near as much leg action as there was before. He can't. You know, he cannot push off that right leg like he'd like. So there's more arms involved. And so being strong up top probably helps him there. It gives him a confidence to get the ball out there. And Tiger has no trouble hitting the ball the same distances that he did before. It's the fine points of the game that he can't work on enough. You know, you need to spend hours on your short game. And that means bending over at the lower back, which also bothers him. He probably just cannot put in the time necessary to get as sharp as he needs to be competitive with these guys.
The book is Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods. The great Bob Herrig with us here on ESPN 106.3. You've covered him from the very beginning, and we know of the mental acuity of Tiger Woods. He comes back from the brutal back injuries and the surgery, and anybody who's had back injuries knows that you feel like I'm not coming back from this. And this guy's winning the Masters, coming back from that 2 years later in 2019. You detail in the book some of the procedure and the rehab and just how severe this was. Was it unreasonable to think the Tiger was not even going to be able to come back and play after that back surgery?
Not unreasonable at all. There was no guarantee whatsoever. And so that part is actually strengthened. But it took away flexibility. And it was going to impact other parts of the spine eventually. In fact, that's why Tiger has since had another microdiscectomy. It's done higher up on the spine. No, there was no guarantees. The surgery was done mostly for quality of life issues. He was in such distress in 2017, he could not find any comfort. You know, he could barely walk. He couldn't do things with his kids. You know, he might have a good day or two good days, and then he'd make a funny move, and it would hurt. And then, you know, okay, so now you're going to try to get ready to play golf? I mean, every time it was sort of a ticking time bomb. And his people, him, they recognized, you know, this isn't working. He's too young to be living a life like this. And so they sought relief. And that was the spinal fusion surgery, which was portrayed to him like, look, you're going to have a quality of life after this, and you might be able to play golf because you're such a great athlete. You're so much farther ahead than the average guy. You and I going through that, you know, because we're not in the same physical condition right as him, makes that much harder. People who have had spinal fusions have said the recovery is like 9 months to a year. Like, you know, they're not hitting house shots 6 or 7 months later like Tiger was. But yet Tiger was, and it was amazing. Remember the videos? Tiger teased with a little tweet about hitting a couple of shots. And this was for of 2017, 6 or 7 months later, October time frame. And everybody's like, what? You know, like, he's actually doing that. And Tiger feels good at that point. He started to realize, wow, I feel so much better than I did. But did that mean that you're going to be able to hit shots with 180-mile-per-hour ball speed, that you're going to be able to work on your short game, that you're going to be able to walk 72 holes and beat the best players in the world? I mean, there was certainly no guarantee of that. I mean, frankly, forget the Masters, which is incredible, but just 2018 season. You know, he played a full schedule.
Yeah.
He competed. He contended in two majors. He was second at the PGA, and he was sixth at the British Open. At the Valspar, which was his fourth tournament back, it was like this time in 2018, less than a year after the spinal fusion surgery, he finished second by a shot. He could have won that tournament if he would have putted it all. And then, you know, obviously he won the Tour Championship, and then the next year he wins the Masters. That two-year run of 2018 and 19 was amazing, given what he had been through.
A couple of things off of that. Your previous book, outstanding as well, Tiger and Phil. Look at that, a dynamic between the two. I hate to get sports talk radio debate culture-y with you, but you laying out that Tiger's back surgery was for quality of life. It was not explicitly to get him back out on the course. This was so you're basically not crippled 10, 15 years from now. What to you is more miraculous, the Tiger Woods 2019 Masters victory or Phil Mickelson, oldest man ever win a major at Kiawah Island?
Well, you know, you could make the argument that Phil's is because Phil did very little leading up to that. He's done very little since. You know, he did finish second at the Masters last year, shot a final round 65, which was amazing. But he's really, you know, leading into that PGA in 2021, he had sort of gone through a stretch of about a year where he didn't do much. And it really kind of came out of nowhere. And when you consider that he was 50, that nobody at that age had ever won a major. The record of 48 by Julius was set in 1968. You know, I mean, yeah, you can make the argument that that was even more remarkable. Tiger at least had been playing. He'd been competing in the several events leading up to the Masters in 19. While he wasn't, you know, he wasn't in contention, so to speak. He wasn't there on the back nine on Sunday. He didn't miss any cuts. He had a couple of top tens. You know, his form was good. Like, it wasn't out of the question that he would have a good Masters. I don't think anybody expected him to win it, but that didn't seem, you know, the idea that he could win wasn't preposterous, but, you know, he was competitive. He had just won a tournament in August or September the year before. He had had those close calls in the majors the year before. So, yeah, it was possible. Phil, really, not at all, you know. And so, and then you throw in his age and at a course, too, like where he wasn't really suited to win. You know, Phil playing well at the Masters or at the Open, the British Open, makes some sense. Playing very well on a course where you have to drive it straight and where the rough is a factor, you add up all that stuff. And, you know, it's a shame, really, because of what's going on in the world of golf, that victory has kind of gone in the background a little bit. You know, that could have been a thing he could have lived the rest of his life off of, winning that PGA Championship at age 50.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like forever ago, and it was only not even 3 years ago at this point. Bob Herrig with us, the author of Drive. It's his second book, and you can get it wherever books are sold. It is out now. Drive, a look at the legacy of Tiger Woods and all the things that goes with it. You wrote extensively about his mindset, his resilience, and about the fact he shot 40 in his opening nine at the Masters in 97, won by 12. Of course, we know about the broken tibia and that miraculous performance to beat Rocco Mediate in extra holes, 2008 U.S. Open. But it was a couple of other instances that really struck me. Him showing up to the Masters to defend his title. He has that devastating, awful 10 on 12, where the year before, that's what really turned everything for him in that final round. And he had hit three balls in the water. He has nothing to play for. He birdied five of his last six holes. There's no reason for that. Or him trying to come back and play in the Masters 14 months after a nightmare car crash. Like, for me, how much of this is him being competitive? How much of his mindset is just proving to himself that he can tough through unbelievably uncomfortable moments?
Well, the example that you gave there about the 2020 Masters when he birdied five of the last six after making a 10, you know, I actually think that sort of epitomizes the theme of the book. You know, Tiger just, there's few people that have a mind like his. You and I, and most people, it's human nature. You know, let's use an example in our life. Let's say we have every good intention to get up tomorrow morning and go jog 5 miles and stretch and get a great 1 hour or 2 hour workout in, because that's what we're going to do. And then you stay up a little bit too late tonight. You wake up tomorrow morning. You say, God, I got a lot to do today. Man, you know, I've been pretty good lately. I'm going to skip the workout today. Well, it's kind of human nature. It's kind of what we do. But yeah. Not Tiger. He never did that. You know, I mean, like, the human nature part of that, those last six holes at Augusta is, look, it just wasn't my year. I gave it all I had. I really wanted to defend, but, you know, I'm not going to win. This is my last tournament of the year. There's nobody out here because, you know, that was the COVID Masters, so there was no fans. You know, I just don't have any more. And he birdies five of the last six. He played those holes like he was in contention and trying to win. Scotty Scheffler said that the iron shot he hit to the 16th green is still one of the best shots he's ever seen. I mean, why? Because that's how he is. You know, Tiger has a lot of pride. He didn't want to shoot in the 80s. I'm sure that was one of his things, was to try to make sure he got under 80. But the rest of it didn't matter. You know, he didn't. The money wasn't going to matter. The world ranking points wasn't going to matter. He, you know, obviously it's his last term of the year. He's not worried about FedEx points. And, you know, the crazy thing about it is that was the last tournament he played officially before the crash. You know, and it could have been our last memory of him, you know, given all how serious the car crash was, you know, and that would have been it. You know, and so it's kind of, you know, I don't think he was thinking of it that way. But, like, there are some people who have the presence of mind to say,
you know, this might be the only time somebody's watching me play. And I realize that wasn't the case there in person, but there have been some players who have that mindset. They're like, you know, might be the only time they've ever come out here to watch me, and I'm going to make sure that I give them my best. And human nature doesn't usually let you do that. I think the cut streak is another perfect example of that with Tiger. Guys all the time rationalize missing a cut. They will say, you know, I don't have it. Instead of, like, trying to fight this out, I'll miss the cut and I'll be off this weekend to work on my swing. For 7 years, Tiger never missed a cut. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, nobody's come within half of that in his time, 142 straight cuts. You know, I mean, to get to 50 is amazing. Xander Schauffele is at 42 right now, which is the longest streak on the PGA Tour, 100 behind Tiger's record. For him to get to Tiger, he'd need to play 20 tournaments a year for the next 5 years and make every cut to tie him. It's, you know, it's pretty unlikely that he's going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what we're talking about here. It's incredible.
You bring up the cuts, 142 straight. That's far and away the greatest of all time in the history of the sport. 7 years without missing a cut. But you know, Bob, you've been covering sports for an awful long time. We live in a ring culture, and we count rings when we determine who the GOAT is. And so the tournaments that matter most are the majors, and Tiger certainly made no bones about it that he wanted Jack's record. He's not going to get to Jack's record. The name of the book is Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods. I think he's the greatest golfer of all time, but in this sports talk culture, he doesn't have the same amount of rings as Jack Nicklaus. He's oft injured late in his career. He also, some people are unable to delineate the golf from the personal problems and the scandal of Tiger Woods. Ultimately, to you, while writing this book, what do you think the legacy of Tiger Woods is?
Well, listen, all of those are great points. You know, Tiger's complicated. It's a complicated story, and you can't look at the record without, you know, without wondering how things might have been different had he not had issues like you pointed out, the, you know, the injuries or the scandal or whatever. But you know, when you look at his overall record and the great skill that he had, I think that what I've tried to decipher here is that it goes beyond that. You know, it's more than that. It's, you can't just get it done with great skill. You can't just get it done because you're so gifted. There needs to be a work ethic. There needs to be a drive, frankly, the title of the book, that pushes you to these great heights. You don't make 142 straight cuts on ability alone. If your mind is off and your game is off, you're not gonna get there. And it's the same, I think, with some of these other things he accomplished. Certainly winning the 2008 US Open with the bad leg. You know, he was told not to play in that tournament. You know, and Tiger basically said, I'm playing and I'm winning. You know, you're gonna win? He barely could walk. You know, I mean, it's crazy to think of some of the stuff that he's pulled off. And so I think that will be his legacy. It's a complicated legacy for sure. You know, there's no way around it. It's you can't deny that. And look, you brought it up comparing him to Jack. It's a little secret, but that's going to be my next book.
Nice.
I'm going to try to get into, you know, who's the greatest. I think it's a phenomenal argument. You know, yes, Jack has the most victories in majors, but is that the only gauge? Is that the only thing that we'll judge it by? You know, Tiger has more PGA Tour wins. Maybe Jack's the greatest champion, but Tiger's the greatest player. And so I'm going to dive into that subject over the next couple of years and see what I can come up with. I don't know the answer. I don't know if I'll come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a neat argument. It's a fun argument. I don't think that we'll ever get the right answer,
But those are the two best for sure. It'd be hard to put anybody else in there but besides those two.
I love that. I absolutely love that because I would argue, too, Tiger is the greatest ambassador in the history of the sport, just branding and age when he came to fruition. And it was almost a perfect confluence of events for him. But I think this book, again, Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods, is a great, great look at why people love, revere, hold him in such high standing, even though he's not really a blip on the competitive radar any longer in Tiger Woods, whether it is him with the greatest in my lifetime major ever played, the 2008 U.S. Open, into the scandal, what really drove me to be a massive Tiger fan, seeing people pile on him and he comes back, becomes a world number one, injuries, back surgery, wins the 2019 Masters, so on and so forth. This is a great look at how this guy put his head down and said, I am not going to be stopped. It is a great, great read. Drive, The Legacy of Tiger Woods. Bob Herrig is the author. Bob, great work on the book. Congratulations and thanks for the time. Really awesome to talk about the book with you, and looking forward now to the next book.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me and highlighting it. Thank you very much.
Florida Power and Light, FPL, proud partner of the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. FPL committed to delivering clean, reliable electricity at the lowest cost possible to better serve current customers and generations to come. They're making proven investments in infrastructure, technology, and clean energy. Visit FPL.com to learn more. That's FPL. When we come back, leaderboard update, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches live right here on ESPN 106.3.